Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel. This is our Sabbath morning study. I wanted to, before I get started in the class this morning, mention two prayer requests that I received via email and or text message over the past couple of days. One is Pat Wiley. She fell late last week and broke her hip. Went in and she's having surgery. She actually had surgery yesterday, and they've already got her up. You know, they don't let you stay around in the bed too long these days. But as I understand it, it was a fairly substantial break, and it required a little bit more surgery once they got in. So I was notified. She left me a message. I talked to her son-in-law, and then a friend updated me and said that she's on the mend, but it's still early post-surgery. So please keep Pat in your prayers. And then Ronnie Fulcher asked me to remember Hope was having some back spasms, and I would like you to remember her in your prayers. So please do that. Thank you very much. It is a beautiful Sabbath morning here in St. Francisville. And as you will hear me talk about, there's going to be some fun and excitement here in the Felicianas. Before I get into all that fun, I would like to also remind you that this week, this past Thursday, we started again a Hebrew class. And the first class, I think, went off fairly successfully. So you can find the video to that class either on the Facebook page or you can go to the unitedisrael.org, our main website, and we have a page set up called Hebrew Helps. And on that Hebrew Helps page, you'll find several things that are, as the name would suggest, Hebrew Helps, things to help you with Hebrew. There are things such as an Aleph Beit chart, a chart of the Hebrew letters. We have a vowel sounds chart. And then we have the video from the first class. I'll post the second, third, fourth, and fifth on this site as well. Plus, there are a whole string of vocabulary sheets. I put these together several years ago when I first began a study of the Hebrew language, and they are vocabulary sheets broken down by frequency of occurrence in the Hebrew Bible so that words which occur 500 to 5,000 times, they're right there together. The words that occur, say, 200 to 500 times, and they're broken down like that. So please feel free to check that out on our website, and hopefully you will benefit greatly from it, especially if you are interested in learning Biblical Hebrew. By the way, I should say, if you're not interested in learning Biblical Hebrew, it would probably be a waste of your time to go to that page because that's what it's all about. So, but I do encourage you to do so. And one final word of encouragement in terms of learning Hebrew, it's not too difficult. It's not in heaven that one should go and ask, you know, it's right here. It's very near. That's Deuteronomy chapter 30, if you didn't recognize it. It's been a busy week. Hopefully, everyone today is able to take a deep breath. It is Shabbat, but it's been a very busy week, at least for me. As some of you know, I participated in Shavuot with the group at Chabad this week in Baton Rouge, which required 2 days, 2 evenings, Tuesday and Wednesday night, and it was quite nice. Several of us went to late night study Tuesday night at the Chabad Center, and we sat around. There were Jews, there were non-Jews, mostly Jews, just a few non-Jews, but it was really quite fun. We talked about the Torah, we talked about the giving of the Ten Commandments, as they are called. We worked through some worksheets, and we really had a good time. The next night, now I stayed till about 2, and when I left, they were still there. So I basically just figured, well, I have to go home at some point. Didn't want to crash on their couch. I'm not so sure that they would. They might have let me do that. So anyway, so I did that. And then the next night we went back and there was the reading of the 10 words and so forth. So it was quite fun. 1 second. Let me answer this. This is rare. But I need to answer this text. Okay. Now, this weekend, United Israel World Union offers two gatherings. One in Hickory, North Carolina. Those of you who are in the Charlotte or in the East Coast, anywhere in that area, they are presently at the synagogue. But I would encourage you now, since you're already listening to me, there's no sense going to listen to Dennis. We'll probably cover the same things. But if you are out there and you have nothing to do, join the fine folks at the Temple Beit Shalom in Hickory. I think they'll be around for a good while after the service today. And so you might be able to get there if you're close. Otherwise, stick with us, because here we are going to have some fun for what is called Shavuot. Let me tell you what we're going to do. I intend to teach a class in just a few minutes after my announcements. I'll provide you with some of the basic ideas around Shavuot, and then we'll take a break here locally. We're not going into, immediately as usual, the dialogue. What we're going to do is move into a period where we prepare for people who are coming in this evening. So we'll do a class, we'll shut off the feed, and we'll go back live at 5 p.m., all right? So at 5 p.m., we intend to talk about and have a great discussion about the 10 words. We're going to talk about other things that are associated with the festival known as Shavuot. So that's 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. So we'll stay with you probably for a couple of hours. We'll take a break so that people can eat here locally. And then we might go back around midnight to 2 o'clock when Lyndon will be singing a special for us. And is that true? Is that what I heard? John told me that. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out. The annual Torah cycle reading for the day is from the book of Numbers, from the book of Bamidbar, and the reading is called Naso. And this covers Numbers chapter 4, verse 21, through chapter 7, verse 89, with a prophetic reading from the book of Judges, chapter 13, verses 2 through 25. But we're not following the annual cycle of reading, so what would have been the next portion of Scripture that we would work through is from the triennial cycle of readings, Genesis chapter 25, beginning in verse 19 through the end of chapter 26. Now, in this particular Torah portion, according to the triennial cycle, it begins with the birth of twins, with the story of the birth of Jacob and Esau. We are going to pick that up next week. And why would we be taking a break? We're taking a break for a very important reason, a biblically mandated time of rejoicing. That's a good reason to take a break from the reading cycle. You see, anciently, when they would follow this triennial cycle of readings, they would always break from the normal cycle of readings to go into a special teaching whenever a festival came about. And that's what we have this weekend. So this weekend, we are talking about what in Hebrew is called a chag. A chag is the word that's translated a feast or a festival. The Hebrew word is literally tied to the idea of whirling. Think of the idea of dancing and rejoicing. Now, one of the things that you'll find out as we go through the material today and into tonight is that this particular festival, we are commanded to rejoice. So if you're not happy, get happy. And I'm not sure if it really works, but you've ever heard the expression, fake it till you make it. So the idea, according to the command, how can you be commanded to rejoice? Well, I think that's one of the goals of the festival, so we have to figure that out. So there was an old show here locally in Louisiana. I don't know how far it spread. I don't know how many others actually looked at it, but or watched it. But you remember the Buckskin Bill show? what did he say? You're never fully dressed until you put a smile on. So start with that. That's one way to think about rejoicing. So this particular festival in Hebrew is known as Shavuot. Now, it's more well-known, perhaps, according to its name, which comes to us through the Greek, which is Pentecost. Now, most people have heard of Pentecost, so this is going to be a Pentecostal service, and we'll build on that idea. So some of you might be thinking, oh, man, he's really going to get us now. We're going into Pentecostalism. This is an ancient form of Pentecostalism that I'll be talking to you about today. It precedes the modern Pentecostal movement by quite a bit of time, a couple of maybe 3,000 years or so, maybe more than that. So if you think about it, though, the Hebrew name Shavuot means weeks, or actually very literally sevens, all right? And the word is also tied, perhaps, according to some linguistic specialist, to the idea of oaths, taking an oath. The Greek term Pentecost is rooted to the idea of 50. You hear the word penta in there. We think of, most people know of a pentagram, a five-pointed star. Pentecost is the 50. It's focusing us on 50. Both of these terms, what they do is they I had to click that off. It was bothering me. I had something popping up on my screen. See, I can't focus on too many things at once. But both of these ideas, both of these names, both Shavuot and Pentecost, are telling us that what we're talking about is the culmination of a 50-day period, if you will, beginning in the spring at Passover, which needs to be defined a bit more fully, and working its way seven sevens, and then the day after bringing us to 50, and that brings us to this special day that we're talking about today, Shavuot, or Pentecost, if you prefer. But this special day holds significance both for the Jews and even for Christians, I might add. All right? Now, the thing about it is the significance and the meaning between these two groups is quite a world apart. Maybe. Maybe there's something that both groups have retained. This is some of the discussion points that I want to have later. But maybe both of these groups have retained an element that needs to be thought about, talked about, because these groups, these ancient groups, came up with some ideas that were based on not only traditions at the time, but quite possibly on some very important messages associated with the day. So for many Jews, many of the Christians, the connection with the Torah and its significance in the Torah has really been lost. In other words, there's a separation between what many of the people who now talk about this day, there's a separation in what they celebrate and what the Bible actually calls for. That actually goes true for all groups which celebrate this day. A lot of traditional elements have come into the celebration of Shavuot. And we're going to do some of those traditional elements, mainly because they're fun and so forth, but what we want to do is be careful to distinguish between that which is traditional and that which is biblical when we talk about this. Now, one thing that I want to begin with when I talk about Shavuot is that it is listed among the festivals of Jehovah, which are listed in Leviticus 23. The official list of the feast. Now, you'll recall, a lot of people think of these feasts in Leviticus 23 as Jewish feasts. But technically and properly and biblically, Leviticus 23 says these are the feast of Jehovah. All right? So these aren't special in any way to only a certain group, in my opinion. They are the festivals, the appointed times, the appointments which Jehovah calls for his people. And what I find interesting is that more and more and more people from various different religious groups and from the nations, whatever is driving this is up for debate, but more and more people are being drawn to these ancient biblical festivals. So what is it about these festivals that's drawing people towards them? Now, people are celebrating them the best way that they know how. And I find it interesting that more and more people are. But these are the Feast of Jehovah. Now, one of the things that I want you to understand about the festival of Shavuot is that unlike the other festivals, it stands out for one very interesting reason. We're not assigned, or it's not assigned, a specific date in the Hebrew Bible. And we'll talk about that. So think about the other feast. You have Shabbat. Shabbat is, today is Shabbat. So Shabbat is every week on the seventh day of the week. We'll call it's a feast. A lot of people forget that this is a feast. In fact, it's listed first. You shall keep the Shabbat. Pesach, Passover, has a very specific date, right? On the 14th day of the first biblical month, then when you get into the talk of the sacrifice, the Passover sacrifice, it's very specific, between the evenings. So there's no doubt, like it's not like you'd go, well, what does that mean? I mean, what day do we actually do this? Now, some of you have heard this story, but there was this lady at a church. She told her pastor that they needed to learn about the Passover. And he called me and asked me, this is years and years ago, 20 plus years ago, would I come teach their church about Passover? And he set it up for a Wednesday night, and I said, that'd be great. I told Bridget, this group is really on the ball. They're planning me early. You know, it's going to be on a Wednesday night. They want me to do Passover. And she said, wow, I mean, they're planning it already? I said, yeah, because we're thinking April. This is January. So he called me back and he said, look, what do we need to buy, you know? And he started asking me details. I said, well, we have plenty of time to worry about that. He said, no, it's this Wednesday. And I looked at the calendar, and that Wednesday was January the 14th, first month, 14th day of the month. And I thought, oh, my God, they think. So I said, oh, well, yeah, let's get this plan together then. So, but I went and I taught, and I was very kind about it. But I remember saying, look, you know, in the Bible it says on the 14th day of the first month. It's beautiful that you recognize this and wanted to be very biblical in your adherence. But in the biblical times, and then I introduced the idea that the months were different. But I didn't want to hurt this person who came up with this. But you see what I'm saying? So there is a specific date for Passover. It's not January 14th, by the way. Don't be confused by my story. Unleavened bread, a seven-day period from this date to this date, right? Clearly defined. Yom Teruah, on the first day of the seventh month. You'll have a Feast of Trumpets, as it's called in English. Then 10 days later, right, on the 10th day of the seventh month, we have Yom HaKippurim, translated generally as the Day of Atonement. And then we have, beginning on the 15th day of the seventh month, we have a seven-day festival called Sukkot, Tabernacles. All of these have dates assigned to them, but not Shavuot. Shavuot involves a little bit of math. And you know how math is. Some people either get math or you don't. And because of this, there's great controversy around the dating of Shavuot. In fact, it's one of the great religious debates of all time, I guess you would say. People have debated this. But I do want to start, if you will, open up with me to the book of Leviticus. We were just talking about Leviticus 23. And if you will go to Leviticus chapter 23, and let's go to verse 15. and begin reading there. Verse 15, 23, it says the following, "And you shall count from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 full weeks shall they be, counting 50 days to the morrow after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall present a cereal offering of new grain to Jehovah." Now, if you read in there and you listen, there are certain clues, but there's also room for debate. I'll explain. But we know that we're talking about a period of time where there is a counting of 7 weeks and something about the morrow after the Sabbath. So you would think, maybe, if you read that, that it's not that difficult, that maybe it would be fairly certain. I mean, it says, it gives you all the clues, right? It's like a math problem. Does it give you, you're a teacher, does it give you everything you need? Some of you teach. Do you have all the information you need? All right. So here's a great controversy that arose around this. By the way, we're not alone in modern religious debate. This is amazing. Even today, especially if you're on Facebook and you follow, religious people fight tooth and nail over some of these same things that they fought over thousands of years ago. This being one of them. This determining the date of Shavuot. So calendar arguments have always been a problem. Do you look, like in our day, we talk about, do you follow the standard Jewish calendar or do you watch for the moon? And, you know, and then others jump in and say, well, what happens if it's cloudy and you can't see the moon? Or that it even happened to me, and I try to avoid this, but this past new moon, I'm watching for those people in Israel, and they didn't see it on the night that it was expected to be seen. Just couldn't see it from 3 locations in Israel. So I thought, well, it'll be tomorrow. Well, sure enough, the next day, the moon is spotted from Israel. I post on Facebook, and I start getting messages saying that you're late. They saw it yesterday. And I'm thinking, they're wrong. They're looking at a post earlier in the day because Israel's 8 hours ahead, and it was today. They're just, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. So this discussion begins to come out over Facebook. I find out that in Hawaii and Sri Lanka, they see the moon. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I don't even know where Sri Lanka is. I'm embarrassed to say that, but I didn't. I just didn't know. But there were a few places on the planet, evidently, where the day prior they had seen the moon. Now, back in the days of Moses, they didn't have Facebook. I don't know if you know this. But they didn't have to deal with all these different sighting opportunities. It was either, did you see it? Nope, I didn't see it. It's like our little group here. But you start involving a global group arguing. You see? So now we can get into more fights. Thank God for Facebook, right? So the question becomes, what Sabbath? You know, I read that you begin the count from the morrow after the Sabbath. Well, you think the Sabbath is a Sabbath. I mean, it's got to be pretty easy, Ross. Just the morrow after the Sabbath would be Sunday. You start your count. Here's what happens. Passover is itself a Sabbath, regardless of the day of the week it falls on. So the 14th, right, the 14th of the first month on Pesach, on this festival, it too is a Sabbath. So there's a question. Do you start counting on the next day? On the first day, 15th day of Nisan is a Sabbath. So do you start counting on the first day of unleavened bread, or do you count, you see how this could get confusing? So they're trying to figure out which way is it. So the morrow after the Sabbath would be the 16th, whatever day of the week it starts, whatever day of the week it falls. And it, you know, people can debate, well, it depends. So here's what begins to happen. The Pharisees take this particular view. In other words, they view that on the 16th is the morrow after. So what that does is it works it out so that as you count these weeks and the morrow after, you come up with a fixed time. You don't have a fixed day of the week, but you have a fixed date, basically, for Shavuot. All right. Sadducees said, no, no, no. This is the regular weekly. Don't be confused. This is the regular weekly Sabbath, and you begin counting on the morrow after, which is Sunday. So what you have is that on 50 days later, you're on Sunday. So it always fell on a Sunday. Now, I'm giving just a real high level. We can get in on the dry erase board and work it out and think it through, and we can even debate it. We'll have all night tonight. We'll have popcorn and water and juice and coffee. So if we want to debate this on TV, on screen, we can do that too. But it always fell, according to the Sadducees, on the first day of the week. Now, so Ross, in a way, this week, has become all things to all men. This hit me last night. You know this phrase? Have you ever heard this? Because I didn't set out to be that guy, but I went and celebrated with Chabad, with my friends in the Jewish community, and now I'm going to celebrate with you heretics this weekend. No, actually, it works out well for us to go with the Sadducean approach this weekend, whether you agree with that dating or not, because a weekend is a good time for people to get together. And so it works out wonderfully. But I did do both. And it did make me think last night about how I have become that guy. In my church days, years ago when I was in the Christian church, and some of you have probably never done this, there's a debate over what name to be baptized in. I've been dunked in all kind of different formulas to make sure I got it right. So hopefully by the end of this weekend, I can say I celebrated the festival on the right day. I've got all the bases covered that I know of. All right. Now, I would like to say that there are some articles that we put up on the United Israel site. I posted a couple. James posted one that's very good called Bringing in the Sheaves, Determining the Date of Passover or Shavuot, Pentecost. And in his article, as well as mine, we both do our best to explain this dating controversy. And then both of us point to an article that Nehemiah Gordon wrote. Some of you know Nehemiah. Very, very thorough article. I would highly encourage you to read those articles that we posted on our site as well as Nehemiah's site. So I wanted to go through a couple of the texts this morning, just so that you have these texts in your notes, especially as we get into tonight. Excuse me. So I want you to go with me to the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 16. And I want to begin in verse 16. Three times a year, it says, three times a year, all your males shall appear before Jehovah your God at the place which he will choose. And then these are broken down. At the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, this is our feast that we're talking about this weekend, and at the Feast of Booths. And they shall not appear before Jehovah empty-handed, Every man shall give as he is able according to the blessing of Jehovah your God, which he has given you. Now, if I were a good evangelical preacher or some other, I would say this is a big theme here. Bring your money into the storehouse, right? But as you know, this is talking about something other than cash money, right? But this idea was that they didn't come empty-handed at these three times when they would appear before the Lord. And these three are known as pilgrimage festivals. So notice the names, and there are other names associated with each of these. You have Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Booths. Remember, the booths is Sukkot. All right, now look with me to Exodus. Let's go back to Exodus. There are two other passages that I want to cover when we're talking about these pilgrimage festivals. So if you'll go to chapter 23, Exodus 23, beginning in verse 14, three times in the year you shall keep a feast to me. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread, as I commanded you. You shall eat unleavened bread for 7 days at the appointed time in the month of Aviv. This is the first month. For in it you came out of Egypt. None shall appear before me empty-handed. You shall keep the feast of harvest. Okay, this is our festival that we're talking about, by the way. Of the first fruits of your labor, of what you sow in the field, and you shall keep the feast of ingathering at the end of the turn of the year, when you gather in from the field the fruit of your labor. Three times in the year shall all your males appear before Jehovah your God. Notice the consistency there. Three times, these three feasts, called different things, but it's during these times you're not to appear before Hashem empty-handed, but you're to appear before him at a set place, and you'll hold a feast. Now look at Exodus 34. Exodus 34, beginning in verse 21. Exodus 34, verse 21. And it says, 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In plowing time and in harvest you shall rest, and you shall observe the Feast of Weeks, the first fruits of wheat harvest, and the Feast of Ingathering at the year's end. Three times in the year shall all your males appear before Jehovah Elohim, the God of Israel, for I will cast out nations before you, enlarge your borders, neither shall any man desire your land when you go up to appear before Jehovah your God three times in the year. Now, these festivals are called Chagim. And again, that idea is associated with the idea of whirling. It's a feast. It's a festival, a time of rejoicing. Now, one thought hit me. Who knows when Muslims, when they make their religious pilgrimage, does anyone know what they call that? Is it called a Hajj? And I have to wonder if somehow that word is associated with the Hebrew Hag. I think it probably is. It's something to think about. But it's this idea of a religious pilgrimage when a person or people go for a very religious purpose to a place that's significant for their particular faith. Now, what do these passages tell us? What is it about this particular time of year? Let's go back to Deuteronomy so that we can get a little bit more information on the Feast of Shavuot. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 16 again. Deuteronomy 16, and I want to read beginning in verse 9. Okay, here we go. You shall count 7 weeks. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time you first put the sickle to the standing grain. Now, this sounds like some good detail, but maybe not for modern people, unless you have a good understanding of when that happened. Then you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to Jehovah your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give as Jehovah your God blesses you. And here we go. And you shall rejoice. It's a commandment. You might want to underline that. Before Jehovah your God, you, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, the Levite who is within your towns, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow who are among you, at the place which Jehovah your God will choose to make his name dwell there. Now listen to this. You shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful to observe these statutes. Now here's something that I find interesting. This particular passage from verse 9 through 12 is very specific about this particular period of time. It tells us quite a bit of information, but one of the things that it says is that whenever you wrap this passage up, the very last thing it tells us is to remember that you were a slave in Egypt. It's like, now notice the people that are involved. Everyone is supposed to be included. The stranger, the widow, the orphan, men servant, maid servant. The idea is that this festival is all-inclusive, that everyone is not only invited but commanded to rejoice, and there's this command at the end not to forget where you came from. I think this is very important. I think it's something that has to be, it's almost in my mind the exclamation point at the end of the command. Don't forget that you were a slave in Egypt. Now think about that. You're bringing this harvest in. You're bringing in. You're at the greatest time of the year. You're celebrating what God has given you in terms of bounty. But don't forget you were a slave. It's this idea that I was there, and now look what God's done for me. So that has to be an important part. Now look with me, go back to Leviticus chapter 23. By the way, there are only a few passages which deal with this festival. I'm just flipping back and forth between them. But in Leviticus chapter 23, if you go to verse 15, and I'm going to read this. It's a little bit longer, but you shall count from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 full weeks they shall be, counting 50 days to the morrow after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall present a cereal offering of new grain to Jehovah. You shall bring from your dwellings 2 loaves of bread to be waved. Now, by the way, I have a friend of ours who is telling us that she's going to be bringing us 2 loaves of bread later. So we have this on the way, and we'll have these 2 traditional loaves as part of the celebration. And you see here the biblical significance, right? You shall bring from your dwellings 2 loaves of bread. She's still bringing it from her dwelling. She's not here yet. She is fulfilling verse 17. Made of 2/10 of an ephah, I didn't check her recipe. They shall be of fine flour, they shall be baked with leaven as first fruits to Jehovah. You shall present with the bread 7 lambs a year old without blemish, and 1 young bull and 2 rams. And they shall be a burnt offering to Jehovah with their cereal offering, their drink offerings, an offering by fire, a pleasing odor to Jehovah. And you shall offer 1 male goat for a sin offering, 2 male lambs a year old as a sacrifice of peace offerings. And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before Jehovah with the 2 lambs. They shall be holy to Jehovah for the priest. By the way, we're not doing the goats and all that. We're not going to do that. All right. Now, verse 21, and you shall make proclamation on the same day. You shall hold a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. It's a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. Now, listen to the final verse. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field to its very border, nor shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am Jehovah your God. Interesting. Now, one of the things that I want to point out is that notice this is associated with harvest time. It is a time of rejoicing. It is an inclusive festival in which everyone, manservant, maidservant, orphan, widow, stranger, is to be invited. It's one of the key festivals, one of the pilgrimage festivals. And then we get this idea here, because it's the season of harvest, there is the idea that you are not to, you know, don't be greedy. You're being blessed, but leave some for those who are poor that don't have great crops or fields or whatever, so that they can come get them, and they will be blessed as well. In James Tabor's article, one of the things that he talks about, he makes this point that when we think about Shavuot and we pray that God will give us our daily bread, as many pray in one form or another, that we not forget those who are less fortunate. It's one of the key points at this time of year and every day of the year. You know, there are people out there who, when we are rejoicing, they're sad. When we feel blessed, they feel robbed. You know, it's a key point when we read in Scripture about Israel's mission, and I bring this up often. Israel is to be blessed, truly blessed, but they are also to be a blessing. And it's through God's people that ultimately blessing is to come to all the other nations. So I would encourage people to think about this. It's very important that we not forget the less fortunate. Remember the poor and the stranger. In Deuteronomy 16, you'll recall, I just read, remember that you were slaves in Egypt. So in your greatest blessing, you're told, remember the less fortunate, make allowance, make a way for them to be blessed as well, and never forget where you came from. So, with that in mind, I want to move into another phase, another question. Most of the festivals, there is this idea that it's somehow associated, these other festivals are associated with a historical reflection, or in some way, the feast is tied to a historical event. All right, so think of some examples. Passover, right? The Exodus from Egypt. Sukkot, how the children of Israel, when they were in the wilderness, they dwelled in temporary dwellings. So these ideas make a clear connection with history. But when we think about Shavuot, biblically, it doesn't specifically give us that historical connection. We'll talk about one in a minute. But what if it is something that was mentioned historically, but it's not quite as obvious? I want you to go with me to the book of Exodus, to Exodus chapter 5. Exodus chapter 5, verse 1. And it says the following. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said, "Thus said Jehovah, the God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. Now, the children of Israel at this time are still slaves in the land of Egypt. They've not celebrated Passover. They've not been rescued from Egypt. They're still in slavery. And the appeal that Moses and Aaron make to Pharaoh is to let them go into the wilderness to keep a feast. Now, what feast are they keeping? It's not Passover. Passover they keep in Egypt. I mean, they basically, that is the departure. They kill the lamb. They're not in the wilderness when that happens, right? So what I'm proposing is that this unnamed feast, they requested permission to keep a feast. I'm suggesting that this is fulfilled 50 days after they leave. Now go with me to Exodus chapter 10. Exodus chapter 10, verse 9. In 10:9, it says the following. Moses said, "We will go with our young and our old. We'll go with our sons and our daughters and with our flocks and herds, for we must hold a feast to Jehovah." So there are these two examples where he tells Pharaoh, "We are leaving you. We are leaving this place, and we're going to keep a feast." Now, I don't think Moses lied. I think he did go to keep a feast. They just never came back. You know? I mean, and he doesn't say he's coming back. He doesn't say we'll go keep a feast and we'll be right back. But see, all along, Pharaoh's playing this game. You remember he said, well, how about you just bring this group or that group, or maybe you can just bring this, but you leave your animals. And so Moses basically tells him, I love this phrase, we will not leave a single hoof behind. We're bringing everybody. Everybody, everything. We're leaving. Now, when he tells him this, I think it's speaking of this particular Chag, this festival, which later becomes associated with Shavuot. All right. A close reading of the Exodus narrative. Whenever we read our story in the Exodus, it does lead us to make certain connections, and I'll explain those. Israel left Egypt on the 15th day of the first month. According to Exodus chapter 19, the children of Israel arrive at Sinai on the new moon of the third month. All right, so if you look at Exodus 19, verse 1, it says, on the third new moon, after the people of Israel had gone forth out of the land of Egypt, on that day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. All right? So remember, first month, 15th day, they travel. They're into the third month. We're pushing 50 days if you do the math. All right? Now, if you go down to, go down to verse 10. Of chapter 19 of Exodus. And Jehovah said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments and be ready by the third day. For on the third day, Jehovah will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. And he goes on and describes some precautions that should be taken in order that the people not get stricken, right? Is that the right use of the verb? So they don't get struck down. All right. So the idea is that we're into the third month, and he tells them to wait and prepare. And on the third day, this great, as we call it, a theophany is going to take place. A manifestation that's called this great thing. The greatest thing in history. the God of all creation, according to the narrative, comes down. There's fire, there's thunder, there's lightning, there's the sound of a shofar that gets louder and louder and louder, shaking, and it's got to be awesome. Now, I think that this is Shavuot. Traditionally, Shavuot is connected to what is called Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, the giving of the Ten Words, this episode or this event at Sinai. Now, the rabbis didn't just make this up. They studied the text very carefully, and they began to notice that this is about 50 days, right? So there is this tradition that 50 days after they left Egypt, they were given the Ten Commandments, as they're popularly called. So Shavuot has, is, and always will be associated with the giving of the law. And that's why. So this evening we're going to get into a very in-depth study of the Ten Words. The tablets, we're going to talk about that. We're going to go into a lot of these verses, and I'm hoping that that you'll have a lot to contribute to those conversations. A friend of ours, David, is here, and we were talking last night. One of my goals tonight is we need to facilitate and hopefully maybe give someone that job to watch the computer and say, hey, we have a question from so-and-so and wherever, and that way we don't ignore all the questions coming in. But we want to get input. We want to have a dialogue involving people about the giving of the law. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Now, the other thing, if you remember, just a few moments ago, I read in Leviticus 23, the final verse in that section, which talks about leaving the corners of your field at harvest time. There's another story that's associated with Shavuot, and that is the story found in the book of Ruth. Now, the book of Ruth, there are several reasons for its association with the festival of Shavuot. One of the things that is most obvious is it's harvest time. I mean, if you read the book of Ruth, the setting is it's harvest time. And Boaz is this this person that is an Israelite. Ruth is a Moabitess. She's a Moabite woman. And she attaches herself to Naomi, and we'll talk about that story as well. But I love the story of Ruth, and I love it for a lot of reasons, but one, it's this beautiful story about a non-Jew, not at all connected in any way by genealogy to the people of Israel. But this person, Ruth, says to Naomi, where you go, I'm paraphrasing, where you go, I will go. Where you die, I will die. Your people will be my people. Your God, my God. Don't tell me to go back. I want to be with you. This is happening all around us today. There are people who are much like Ruth of old in this story. In fact, some of you may not know this, but according to traditional Judaism, conversion, many things within conversion are based upon this particular story, which we can also talk about. But the idea, though, is that Ruth is very much associated with the story of Shavuot, and so the book of Ruth is read. It's only a few chapters, right? So you could probably read that, even if you don't accept all the traditional elements of Judaism, because it's the thing to do. It's Ruth. It's Shavuot. They go together. There are a couple of other things associating Ruth with Shavuot. You know, Ruth is the grandmother of King David. And so there is this idea, according to tradition, that King David dies on Shavuot. And so he is associated with Shavuot in that sense. Now, There's a tradition. Notice I'm talking about tradition. There's another tradition about staying up late and studying on Shavuot. There are a couple of reasons for this. I like it. Now, this is my favorite Jewish tradition. If anybody says Ross does not believe in the traditions of the Jewish people, you tell them they are a liar. Because this one, above all, is one that I keep. And I'm not Jewish. I'm not intending to become Jewish. But I love any tradition that involves late night and Bible study. If you put those two together, baby, I'm in. And so one of the traditions is that you stay up all night and study the Torah. Now, there might be people passing out before it's over, but locally, we're going to try to do that. Now, Dave is probably going to have to help keep me up. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night, but or just take bad pictures of me while I'm passed out drooling. He's done that before, too. But here's the idea. So where did this tradition come from? There are a few different stories. One is that the children of Israel were very, very excited the night before the giving of the law. They knew that it was coming. They knew that they would receive the commandments of God, and they were so excited. You know how when you get so excited, you can't hardly sleep? And they stayed up, and they stayed up, and they stayed up, and they slept in. And it comes time to give the commandments, and nobody's at the mountain. This is a tradition, right? It's a legend. And so when they wake up, they rush and they receive the Torah, and they were so embarrassed that they said, from now on, we're going to get a good night's sleep before Shavuot and stay up all night to show that we're okay, we're good, we know how to do this now. So some might say, well, that's silly, I don't believe it. It's a story, but again, I love this tradition because what does it do? It leads us to stay up late and study. I think we ought to do this almost every night. Every night, we just get everybody to come up here and study. We'll call it late night, just like the late night show. Who knows? That might be a tradition we start. I'm going to talk later about the tradition of dairy. We'll have wonderful things to eat here at the center. We'll have dairy. We'll have vegetable dishes. We'll have bread. But there's also a reason traditionally why those particular elements are part of Shavuot as well. Now, one of the other things that I wanted to mention, tying Shavuot in with the daily activities, there is this tradition that is found in the Book of Jubilees. The Book of Jubilees, copies of this document were found at Qumran. It dates approximately 150 BCE is the dating most scholars would assign it. And it makes this interesting point that Noah's covenant with God, Abraham's covenant with God, and a covenant between Jacob and Laban took place at Shavuot. So Shavuot then becomes associated with covenants, oaths. Now remember early on I told you that the word Shavuot, the root word, can mean weeks, means sevens, can also be tied to the idea of oaths. So at least in antiquity, there was this idea that this is the season of oaths. So we have Noah's covenant, if that's true, the legend, covenant with Abraham, and then the covenant at Sinai. What if they did all take place roughly at this time? It would then become a season, if you will, of rededication. They're rededicating oneself to the covenant. So on today, the day of Pentecost has fully come. The day of Shavuot is fully come upon us. A time associated with the harvest, a time associated with God's giving of the Torah, and of our receiving of the commandments. We are commanded on this day to hold a hag, a festival, time of rejoicing, a time of whirling. We'll have a dance-off tonight. We'll probably not show that one on video. But here are some points to remember. Don't forget where you came from. Don't forget the less fortunate. It's a day associated with the word of Jehovah, and for many, Pentecost or Shavuot is associated with the Spirit. You might think, well, how do you tie the word of Jehovah and the Spirit together? And I'm not sure that's too Hebraic or too Hebrew Bible oriented. It sounds like it might come from another document. I'd like to challenge that. I do want to read one of my favorite passages from Isaiah 59, the book of Isaiah, chapter 59. We're talking about a season of covenants. Isaiah 59, 21. And as for me, this is my covenant with them, says Hashem. My spirit which is upon you, and my words which I have put in your mouth shall not depart out of your mouth or out of the mouth of your children or out of the mouth of your children's children, saith Jehovah, from this time forth and forevermore. So as we think about the season of Shavuot or Pentecost associated in groups with the giving of the law and the pouring out of the Spirit of God, may we be found worthy in our day of receiving fresh the words of the covenant written on our heart and the indwelling of God's Spirit. Because we need both of these, the Word of God in our mouth, in our heart. We need this, but we also need the Spirit of God in order to fulfill the mission, in order to be a light to the nations, a covenant of the people. And whether a person is an Israelite or a non-Israelite, if one believes that they are Moabite in descent, if you traced your genealogy on Ancestry.com and it took you straight back to Moab or Ammon, it doesn't matter. Because Isaiah 56 says, blessed is the man who takes hold of the covenant. See, it doesn't matter what a person traces their genealogy to, and Shavuot makes that perfectly clear. So I want to tell you that today is going to be fun. We are going to take a break from our online presence, and we will post a link, but just so you know, our intention is to go live again at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. At 5 p.m., we're going live, and we'll be talking about some of these points that we covered in general in an overview this morning. We'll be talking about the Ten Commandments. We'll be talking about these traditional elements. I really want to spend some time going into the Ten Words, as we're calling them, all right? So Shabbat Shalom, and we'll see you in a few hours. Be ready, be back, and don't go to sleep and miss this. All right? You might want to take a nap. We're going to be up a while. Shalom, shalom.